and welcome to Marooned at MacBytes headquarters. Day 267. How are we all doing? I can see the chat. It was opened on my machine, wasn't it?
It was.
For very good reason. Mike's got enough keyboards and mice and computers to stock an Apple store, and none of them are actually in a working condition at the moment.
We better tell Sarah what's going on. We're assuming we're live.
We're live.
Right.
We're live.
Oh, there we go.
We're live.
Yeah, what we do, Sarah, is we play previous episodes of Marooned until 7 o'clock, when it's time to be
marooned. So we're here live now. Eventually, don't all start panicking, we've just got over that. Eventually the banner will say live, but give it a couple of seconds to catch up. So,
but Sarah, you need to be in earlier than that to beat Johnny to number one spot.
Yeah, about 4 o'clock usually. Anyway, hello, Jonathan. Hello, Paul. Hello, Sarah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, what?
Johnny's kettle's died.
We have a MacMite's demise. We do need the Boot Hill music, don't we? Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It is life telling you, Jonathan, to get that kettle that was so expensive your mother said she'd disown you if you bought it. That one.
Is it an eye kettle?
It's an eye kettle.
And has it been biggled?
Oh, so what's going on?
I know what's going on.
CQ Deb. The new one won't arrive till Wednesday, but is it the one that might have been ordered?
Just don't
out,
tell Jonathan. Your don't tell your mother, Johnny.
She doesn't listen to Maroon, does she?
Anyway, those of you who listen to MacBytes will know about a certain keyboard. We did mention it on the show, didn't we?
Which one?
Yeah, we must have done, because it was the title of the show.
Oh, the Hungarian keyboard.
The Hungarian keyboard, yes. Well, as I was coming back with the dog, I had a look at Leicester Sports News. England have been drawn in the same group as Hungary in the World Cup draw.
That would have been so handy, Mike. Oh, so handy.
Yeah.
So if we want to adopt a Jonathan, we could adopt a Jonathan. Absolutely we could. Jonathan's got very expensive tasting kettles. I can't wait for the unboxing and review, Jonathan. My gran used to do that, Sarah. She really wasn't up to it. She had arthritis. Very, very bad from being about 36 years old. And she had it in her hands and her legs. But she insisted that she would boil the kettle that way, that she would boil water that way. Mum said, no, you need a kettle. So she comes in one day and she says, I've got one. And it was one of the old style ones with a whistle on it.
Kim throws her cup of water in the microwave. That works, doesn't it?
Yeah, that works.
Although Johnny said the water explodes when you open the door.
Jonathan, I think your microwave might have gone. Mike had one that used to incinerate fish fingers.
Oh, fish fingers, yeah.
What we tried to do was the cat came in. It wasn't our cat, but it did like fish fingers. So we got a fish finger out and we put it in the microwave. And then Mike's microwave had a hot spot. And it incinerated this fish finger from frozen in 8 seconds. I said, don't give it long, not in that microwave. 8 seconds, we took it out. You could have hammered it with a hammer, couldn't you? The cat thought it was fabulous, lasted all day. So, yes, we have fun with microwaves.
This keyboard's lovely and clean.
It is now, yeah. Isn't it? We've had fun today because, obviously, we have the new kit. Can I just say, spoiler alert, we are, it's out of the box, isn't it? But the issue is, we've had a demise, like Jonathan, only ours wasn't the kettle. The demise we had was an old iMac of mine, a very old iMac of mine. And it was already, it was the one that wouldn't turn on for ages. And when I finally got it sorted out, I had to put an external hard drive on it. Anyway, it's gone again. So I said to Mike, right, that's going to change what we've had to do. So we've had to move iMac number one. First of all, we had to make a space, didn't we? So we move iMac number one into the space. Then we move iMac number 2 into the space where iMac number 1 was. We move iMac number 3 into the space where iMac number 2 was. And iMac number 4 has gone into the space where iMac number 3 was. And that's where we're up to, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, shall I tell them what you did with the keyboard?
Yeah, go on. You tell them. I'm just telling Tracy about Johnny's kettle.
So, Mic on the iPad. Look at him. Bless. Bless.
There's a reason for that, but we can't reveal that.
Okay.
Well, we can, shortly.
Shortly. Very soon. Before Jonathan goes, obviously.
Yeah.
What was I saying? So, he sits down with the new toy. And he's fine just going through it with the mouse. Until he comes to the point where it says, you know, create the new account. Put your name in. So he picks up his keyboard and he starts typing. I'm leaving him to it. And he says, keyboard's not working. Keyboard's not working. Panic. Panic. Yeah, that would be the keyboard off the old iMac, Mike, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, we sorted him out. So we're a bit all over the place with where the kit is at the moment. And that's not all we've been up to today, was it?
No.
Do you know, considering the time we surfaced out of bed, we've done particularly well.
Yeah.
Anyway, while Mike was saying this isn't the right keyboard, I said, I picked the keyboard up, didn't I?
Mm.
It was filthy. Do you know what it reminded me of?
What?
My cousin, when he was a baby, well, he was about 2 or 3, and my aunt had no control over him whatsoever. So if she wanted anything, she had to give him a treat. She sounded like Lola, isn't it? So, and he liked Freddo frogs.
I like Freddo frogs.
There were Freddo frogs all over the house. If you sat on the sofa, you'd probably find a Freddo frog up your backside. He would secrete them everywhere. So I turned this keyboard over of Mike's. I mean, the front was dirty enough, but the back was minging, Mike. So I've just cleaned it, and he's sitting there fondling it now like it's a new
it
toy.
It wasn't minging. It just had a bit of chocolate on it.
You should have seen. I should have taken a photograph of it, is what I should have done. This is after the keyboard shaming next door. And this was my keyboard. But yeah, let Mike use it for 6 months and you should have seen the state of it.
Yeah, the old keyboards will work on the new Mac, Kim.
They will, but it was actually not wired up, but it was Bluetooth to the old one. So that no keyboard had been set up on the new one. So he plugged one in. Right, so have we got the gender reveal? We'll tell you where we're up to. Having shuffled number 1, 2, 3, and 4, we've not finished yet. We've got 5 and 6 to shuffle yet. But having got that far, Mike was in a position to sit down and turn it on. So he did. And you get through all of the jiggery pokery, don't you? I think there was a bit of a big giveaway. There was a circle, wasn't there?
There
and
was.
You could tell from this circle whether it was Biggles or Catalina. So, shall we have the last...
I've come up with a new name for Catalina.
Have you really?
Catatonic.
Yeah, my machine just hung at 7 o'clock today, you might know. So, last chance for a guess. Last chance for a guess.
Tracy says your keyboard's shaming me now. Sarah says Catalina. But Sarah's got insider dealing information.
She has. But my logic was, ours were BTO. So they were built to order and put together, you know, and Apple have never, ever... So I'm in two minds. I'm saying it's too close to call. A bit like the US election.
And Brexit.
And Brexit. Oh, yeah. I said I have never known Apple ship something that is built to order with an old OS. They just would not do that.
Everyone's going for Catalina. Oh, no. Paul's going for Biggles. Jonathan's going for Catalina.
No, Jonathan's going for Biggles.
No, Biggles, yeah. Kim and Anthony and
got
Sarah.
So 3 for Catalina.
For Catalina.
So, are you ready? Gender reveal is...
It's Cat-a-Lina.
It is. And I said to Mike, as I said, I'm thinking from the look of that, it's Catalina. I'm actually really shocked. It's over a month since Biggles came out. This was built to order, and it's Catalina. Jonathan says you're blessed.
Oh, he's come up with that.
What?
He's come up with the enter password.
Yeah, because it's default settings, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't try logging in with a keyboard that's in your hand, because that's for the other one.
I've got this keyboard.
Jonathan says you're blessed, and Tracy says lazy sods. I totally agree. What happens if yours has Biggles on, Elaine, if Mike's has Catalina? I must admit, for once, Jonathan, I don't mind, because I've got to seriously think, if I'm doing videos for stuff like Keynote, it looks totally different on Biggles. The interface is completely different. Even the same version, down to the 0.0001, it looks completely different. So there's no point me doing videos on an old system, is where I'm at. It's a tough call. It is a tough call. You're going to Wiggles, Giggles, spell check, Biggles. I'm loving that, Sarah. Paul, shocked. You were going with my logic. I am shocked. I am.
It's got this thing popped up, this dialogue box, identifying your keyboard. The keyboard setup assistant. Press the key immediately to the right of the shift key on the left side of the keyboard that can't be identified.
Well, don't do it with that keyboard.
No, I know. I'm doing it with...
Hang on. The box.
It's in the box, isn't it? whatever.
Mike, just leave it alone.
Leave
that dialogue there.
Go and play with the dog.
I am shocked, because it's like admitting that Biggles actually isn't ready for prime time
yet.
Well,
I was going to say that. I was going to say that, exactly that. That, you know, Apple don't want you to have Biggles, obviously.
Well, I guess they don't want the grief from it. But yeah. I was even more surprised when Mike actually got it turned on.
That's exactly what Paul from Sydney says, points to where Apple's is with their confidence in Biggles.
I agree with you. It is a tricky one, as far as I'm concerned. Because I know from Paul in Ohio that at least ScreenFlow will work. TechSmith are saying hang on with Camtasia. I think it'll probably work. But that's where they're at. Like I say, because of the interface, as far as I'm concerned, it's a tricky one, that. I don't want to be recording stuff I've got to re-record 5 minutes later. I mean, technically speaking, you could keep the audio, but, you know, you never get it to marry up properly. So that is a pain, a major pain. But mine isn't open yet. Mine is sat behind me in a brown box. You see Sarah saying the same. Oh, no. I think if they've brought it out, they should be confident enough in it. People have moved to it. Now, I guess I'm in a position where I've put Biggles on my laptop, and I have had a couple of issues, but, you know, nothing more niggly than anything else. Hence, Biggles. You know, things like I can't... The app store isn't working properly. But to be perfectly honest, the app store isn't working properly for anybody at any point.
Well, that about sums me up.
What?
Game Center, no friends.
Well, yeah, not even I'm in there, am I?
Right.
Tracy says it would be funny if Elaine's was Biggles.
It wouldn't be funny at all.
Well, that would actually be quite an issue, Tracy, because even if I decided to go to Biggles, you know, my own decision was, okay, I will Biggles it. At least I could go back to Catalina. But if it arrives with Biggles, that's it. You could never go back to Catalina. So it would be a bigger issue than you might imagine. I don't know. Mine's still in the box. We did the RAM thing. That was absolutely fine. The RAM thing is tricky, because not all that RAM seats the same way. We had this last time. Last time we couldn't get the back off one. So there's this little notch inside the power, where the power cable actually goes in. And you need to push it in. And they say, like, you know, push it in with your nail. But my nails are too long for that. Or too short. So I've got, like, longer thumbnails, but either way. So I did find an implement for that. So we got into this one. Not too bad. But the way they've designed the door to get in, it actually detaches totally. And then you flick these two things at the side and the ram falls forward. But as you're trying to seat the ram, two of them clicked in fine and two of them didn't. So if I need to push it, I'll either push it with my fingers because I'm already earthed to try and seat it properly. And if that fails, then I will use the wooden spoon over the top and push on that rather than actually try and break the ram. But yeah, it was difficult last time. There were two totally different approaches. The doors felt completely different. And I think three of the sticks seated okay and one didn't. You do have to press really hard and you're petrified you're going to break it. And as you head up to the top, so there's four slots and it's shipped with one in the bottom one and one in the third one. So I took out the bottom one and put one in that was probably the most difficult to get at the right angle. Then I took the third one out and then I put the second, third and fourth in. The second one seated perfectly first time and you could hear it click and it was fine. The bottom one never clicked at all. Three and four, I would say four clicked better than three. I just like, to me, you should have some kind of consistency with it. When you put RAM into a PC and you're pushing down on the motherboard, each one clicks in exactly the same. This did not. So belt and braces when you're putting that in. The cover is a nightmare. The cover, you feel like it's breaking, both in terms of how it feels tactile and how it sounds. The cover doesn't have any screws or anything. So how it fixes in, and it's difficult to get out as well. You could do with three hands to get it out. But when you come to push it back in, you literally just line it up and push. But all around the edges of it, there's like metal teeth and they're going to squeeze in as you push, but it makes like a grinding noise. It's not pleasant. I said, I don't like how this feels. Did I make a new video of how to do the RAM? Well, they tell you to lay it flat on the desk, glass down, and I won't do that because if there's a speck of dust on the desk, it could scratch it. So I don't do that. I put the RAM in with it stood up, which is a little bit trickier. But the leg is totally in the way. I said to Mike, it could do with a transparent window on the leg so you can actually get it out of the way and get to the RAM. So we did a video of like me putting it in, but it would be a better, I think, on the second one, when we're putting the RAM in the second one, I did explain what I was doing, but I haven't seen the video, so I don't know how clear it is. With Mike behind the camera, I don't know. How close could you get? You could see it. Could you actually see the RAM going in?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll have a look at it before we do the second one and try and make sure we've got enough videos of it and enough images of it. Good night, Jonathan. Right. The grinding noise would freak you out. It feels awful and it sounds awful. And I said to Mike, I don't like this. And then all of a sudden it just went click. And the whole thing just seated perfectly. Like, okay, now I'll calm down. Don't like this with new kits. Don't do that. Doesn't surprise Neil, it's Catalina. Latest iMac, probably manufactured 2 or 3 months ago. Even BTO are pre-configured.
Mine's 10.15.7 as well.
Which is the latest, is it?
I think so.
Well, hang on. What's mine? Let's have a look at mine. I'm still on my old one at the moment. About this Mac, which is up to date. 10.15.7. Definitely need to ponder what's going on with this one and the new one. I just think Apple have never done that before, no matter how late it's been released or how early it's released. You know, I've always ordered a Mac virtually the day the new OS comes out. And I'll get the Mac like 5 days later and it's got the new OS on it. And this is the first time that's not happened. So weird. Very, very, very weird. Hello, Simon. You missed the gender reveal, Simon. We did a gender reveal, only it's not gender, but never mind. It's an OS reveal. And it was...
Catalina.
It was Catalina. Mine's still in the box. They're all having a giggle over the fact it could be Biggles. We'll see. Maybe you should do some updating. Mine's been all right on that one, apart from the fact that this machine is not right to start with. So it's not any worse than it was before, but sadly it's no better either. And it's eating disk space. I really do not know what it's doing with the disk space. It's telling me it's got 28 gig, which means it could be a very short show tonight because it's just dropped 7 gig in 2 minutes. I have no idea what it thinks it's doing. It's got more disk space, trust me, but it doesn't think it has. So it's the same thing. You know, it either thinks it has and it'll be fine, or it doesn't think it has and then it'll just stop. So we'll see how that goes. I will do some moving of stuff and see if it frees up space. Now it says 35. It makes it up. Honestly, the 600 free. And it totally ignores it. Is that the thing where it's halved the drive into data and system? It's already done that on Catalina. So you do need some special settings in Carbon Copy Kelowna. But this is just weird. This does report, when I reboot, it reports back it's got sort of 500 or 600 gig free, which is right. And then over time, obviously all the recordings that I make, audio just eats disk space. So I've got a folder here from MacBytes 134, which was 4.3 gig. I've got some marooned at MacBytes headquarters, which is 15 gig. And I've got more here. So let's put those in there. And what have I got there? That is going to be big. 83 gig of audio files. So what I want to do is obviously move them off the hard drive, put them on an external drive. But even when I do, it makes no difference. It does not free up any space. The Mac is completely unaware that that space is now available, which is more than mildly annoying. It was doing the same on Mojave, and I half hoped when I did the Catalina thing, it might sort itself out, but it didn't. So it's going to need a complete rebuild this at some point. We did have fun and games, didn't we, trying to work out whether we were going to take anything with it or not. Mike was in two minds, but tending on the yes side, but then ultimately decided no, didn't you?
Mm.
What are you fiddling with now?
Colours.
What sort of colours?
Wallpaper, desktop colours.
Oh, isn't the desktop weird when it starts going dark through the day? Freaks me out that. I keep thinking that for those who have had a Mac long enough, when the screen started going dark, your panel was going. So throughout the day, it starts going dark and I'm like, oh my God, it's broken. It's broken. And then I think, no, it's doing the day thing. So Mike's just setting it up so it looks exactly like the old one, which is how we like it. So is this making any more space? No, it's not. It's going to have to be rebuilt. But given the day we've had, first day of our holiday, who follows me on Facebook? If you follow me on Facebook, you will have seen the picky. But I'll put the picky in here too. That's a usefully named picky, isn't it? Is there a better copy? There should be. There we go. I put this image on Facebook and I called it the first day of our holiday. Because today is probably the first full day, isn't it? It's the first day that Mike's not actually working. There you go. So I put this on Facebook for a giggle. Where's it gone? There we go. Let's drag that up there and share it with you guys. This is true. This is absolutely true. Oh, you can't even see the laptop screen now on the 16-inch. Joe, isn't that the second time you will have had that back? It's poor these days with Apple. There you go. That was the first day of our holiday. Seriously. Have you noticed, Mike, on the bottom half of that image, there's a dog? That's the dog.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the cheap dog.
Yeah.
For many, many years, that paint company have used a dog in their adverts. A real one. Real English, old English sheepdog. And that's the representation on the tin. So that was the first day of our holiday. But, you know, not as bad as last year. Not as bad as last year. This is the third iteration. It's going to the Apple Store on Saturday. So earlier than you were expected then. You may need to buy a temporary replacement. As luck would have it, there's a brand new laptop out. Are you tempted with an M1? Was that the one that had the keyboard that people didn't like? Because I think that's the keyboard I've got on my MacBook Air, and I don't dislike it. Got no problems with it at all. But people loathed it, and I really can't work out why. I've actually got my camera set up as well. I think it was Tracy that said, what happened to that fancy camera? That fancy camera's here. There we go. So we've been using that today. So let's see if we can get that where it's supposed to be. Because every time I try and post an image from here, it doesn't work. It's as though it needs... signing with email. Why it keeps signing me out, I don't know. If it didn't sign me out, then I wouldn't have a problem, would I? And it doesn't help when you go into it and it doesn't understand the password. The fact it's linked up to one password. Right. Now it's sorted, which means I should be able to send that image that I've just taken, which would be good. There we go. No. Where's WhatsApp? Not WhatsApp, Slack. No, what am I talking about? Cloud. That's where I'm trying to send it. Have it right yet? Right, let's upload that. Oh, it actually worked, which means I should get the link over on the Mac. Oh, that's so civilised. So civilised. There we go. M1s are useless to Neil, can't run Google Drive file stream. In that case, they'd be exactly the same way to me, Neil. That is not good at all. Thing is, Google don't shift that fast, do they? In terms of, well, we'll update it all. That's more than a little annoying. They do the same with the apps on iOS. When iOS 14 came out, I'm like, yes, I can change my default email client. Oh, no, I can't. Not until they start supporting it, and they're not supporting it yet. Do you know, I've had an email from Camtasia, the TechSmith.
So have I.
Introducing Audiate.
Yeah.
Introducing it, you released that about 8 months ago. I think you're a smidgen behind there. Reintroducing. Clearly, there's not much uptake for this app. Before you get excited, thinking, oh, it's a fantastic new app, it's subscription, and you're going to need 17 kidneys. And that's probably only going to get you a month's worth. It's obscenely priced. I guess there is some server-side element to it, so there's an ongoing cost to them. But even so, it's obscenely priced. Right, so Neil says, think the M series Macs have got a great future, and you'll join. That's where I'll join the family when the kids have grown up a bit. I don't think it'll take Google that long, because I think, unlike other chip manufacturers where it's like, oh, it doesn't work, we're going to have to do something, with it being Apple, people will get their backside into gear. Because the people who are buying these computers are not really the power users. And thus, they are people who just expect it to work. You know, it should just work. Why is that not where it should be? So they've got no patience. They're not going to wait for anything. I think those of us longer in the tooth with more experience are like, well, you know, don't rush them. It'll be there when it's there. But that is a biggie, isn't it?
Job number one, set the wallpaper colour. Job number two, remove everything off the dock.
That's how I go.
Do you remember when I did that on that Windows machine?
Oh, that was fabulous. With the home button. Start button. Well, you were learning, weren't you?
Yes.
And you learned that wasn't the best idea.
Bless.
Can you explain why that wasn't the best idea?
Yeah, because I've basically removed all the shortcuts off the start menu.
You put them on the desktop.
I put them on the desktop, yeah.
Mm. And then what happened?
I can't remember.
Why wasn't it a good idea? Because to see them on your desktop, you have to minimise all your apps. Whereas if it was on the start button, you could hit the start key and they would just pop up and they would hover over there.
I wanted it to be like Windows 3. It was Windows 95.
Yeah, get with the programme, Mike. Yeah. There's no looking back. You can't do it. You can't. So the plan today, as you've seen, was idle away in bed for a good lie-in. But then we had to get up and face the paint, didn't we?
Yeah.
But we did. Yeah, we would die if you saw how much is on Kim's dock. I never see the dock, Kim. Whenever I see it, I think, oh, yeah, there's a dock, isn't there? No, everything's with keyboard for me. So the only when it boots, the only thing that's on the dock is the finder and the trash, which is now the bin. I don't have any icons on there whatsoever. So the only apps that are on there are the ones that are running. And I have it so tiny as well. I have it as small as you can possibly get it. But as I never use it, it really doesn't matter to me. I guess the only time I venture over there is if I need to force quit something and I don't have the force quit thing open. And then I would. But other than that, no. Ah, and I see Anthony used to have all his apps nicely grouped into different windows on Windows 3.1. You missed that when you went to 95. There was a fundamental difference, wasn't there? Wasn't it on Windows 3.1 and 3.1.1 that you could put the things into groups? And then when you went onto Windows 95, weren't the groups alphabetical or something? There was a fundamental difference. It wasn't as simple. They changed how the thing worked. Mm. And all everybody wanted to do was just like Auntie, make it work the way it did, because I understood that. Leave it be. So I think I did it a different way. And I also had to create, there was a startup group, wasn't there? It was like Magic Beans, if you called it startup, and then you put a shortcut in it. And of course, there was then the idea of shortcuts as well, which all muddied the waters. It took a long, long time to settle down. What were you painting? Missed a couple of episodes. No, nobody knew we were painting. We'd contemplated painting. But you know, one of those things that's like it's been sat there for and we've just worked it out. I said to Mike, it must be more than 6 years because Mum died 6 years ago. And when we worked it out, it was 2011. What had happened was the office used to have one different wall because originally it was a bedroom. So it had this odd wall. And it had been sat there like that for a long time. And I kept saying to Mum, can't be doing with this odd wall, you know, need it doing. So we decided we would do it and we booked the Easter holiday to do it. And the reason it was such a big thing to do was it was the wall that my computer backs onto. And it needed the paper stripping off it. And then it needed the wall sorting out, you know, holes and stuff needed filling. Then it needed the wall sizing, which is where you put like some treatment on it, and then finally you can put the new paper on it, and then you can wait for that to dry, and then you can actually paint it. So it was like it's just like a cracked ice pattern that's on it. So we did all that, but the thing was, as we were heading up to doing it, we needed a project plan, because the desk was going to need to move and I couldn't do without the computer for a week. So we'd planned it that we would slide everything back off the wall. But obviously, you can imagine the weight that's on the desk. Then there was the MacBytes Magic cupboard to deal with, which has about 98 drives in it. And there was no sliding that, trust me. So I think the old one had legs, didn't it?
Yeah.
This one will slide. So we managed to get... So we sorted a plan out, put it like that. And we were going to start it on Good Friday. Mike was finishing on the Thursday and my dad had been away. He'd been house sitting for this couple who, did they have kids at the time? They must have done, wasn't they?
I can't remember.
They must have gone away somewhere with the first kid. They had at least one. And they went away for a month and they were worried about the house being empty. Really expensive house in the poshest area of Manchester. So dad said he'd go and he'd stay. So he did. When he came back, he said he wasn't feeling very well. But the wasn't feeling very well, what he'd done was he had treated himself to every garbage meal he adored for a month. And you remember that? There was a film, wasn't there? The guy that ate burgers for a month.
Yeah, Super Size Me.
That's right, Super Size Me. Well, he came back and he really wasn't well. But he'd had like, he loved stew and he loved soup. But the thing was, he ladled salt in it. So we weren't surprised when he came back and he had like water retention on it on his hands and his ankles. But he also had a cold. So he said, I need some antibiotics for this thing. It's not shifted in 3 weeks. So off he heads to the doctor's. Doctor takes one look at him and sends him for tests. But, you know, that's what doctors do these days. I like doctors when they could take one look at you and like sniff your left finger and tell you what was wrong with you. When leeches were de rigueur, as I said in the show.
Yes.
Well, as Matt Bytesiri said in the show. So that day on the Thursday, Dad took Mum out shopping. And I'm sat here thinking, oh, you know, I need my Valium because we're going to move everything in the office tomorrow. And I do mean everything. So then this letter arrived and it had, oh, no, that's right. It wasn't a letter. It was a phone call. This phone call came and it was on Mum's phone and they were out. So I thought, I'll answer it, which, you know, was big of me because I don't normally answer the phone. Not at all do I answer the phone. So I answered it and it's the hospital and the plain holy hell. And I'm like, well, excuse me, what's the problem? He's missed an appointment. I said, who has? So they gave me the name and that and it was my dad. So I said, he hasn't had a letter. Well, we sent it. We sent it yesterday. I thought, well, he's not going to get that today, second class, is he? Well, he needs to get here. So I said, right. And I think they took him in on the Friday, didn't they? Which was weird because it was Good Friday. Which meant, seeing as though Mum was the expert in the DIY department with the painting and the paper, that we'd lost a day off the holiday before we started because they wanted to see him ASAP. I did a quick Google of who he was going to see. And it was the head of oncology. So I thought, well, he's not got a cold then, has he? You know, like, well, we can't say anything, but, you know, you must come in. You must see. I said, well, who is he going to see so I can tell him, you know, where to go? So they give me the directions and they said it was this Mr. Montague. So there I said, thank you very much. No problem. You know, we can't tell you what department he's from. I said, that's fine. That's fine. Not a problem. So put the phone down, goes on Google, Withenshaw Hospital, Mr. Montague. Oh, head of oncology. Fair enough. Dad's got cancer. So when they come back, I have to tell him, you know, they want to see him tomorrow. And he's like, that doesn't sound good, does it? And Mum looked at me and she knew I knew more. She knew I knew more. And well, I think we waited until he disappeared and she said, well, what department's he from then? I said, I think you know. And she said, oncology. I said, oncology. So she said, well, I won't tell, you know, your father, because he wouldn't listen anyway. So he might as well have another day of ignorance. So they had to head off. So the first day was a write-off. He came back and I remember Mum, I went to the back door and although she knew the day before, actually hearing it from them, she was stood at the back door looking all teary. So I had to take her through and sort her out. So Friday was a total write-off. And then I said, well, you're going to need to spend some time with Dad, because what they'd actually said to him was, you're terminal. There's nothing we can do. Do you want palliative care? And he was like, no, I'm fine. But Mum was like, well, how long is how long? You know, and they didn't say. So as far as we knew, he could have had a week or 2 weeks, or he could have had 2 years. We had no idea. No idea whatsoever. So I said, you should spend some time with Dad. And she said, I promised you I'm going to do this waltz. We're in the middle of this painting job. So she said, well, at least let me get it started. So we had to move all of the stuff. And we did do the wall, didn't we? And we did all of the wall. And then, of course, we put the stuff back. And we got to the point where it was like, you know, the niceties was going to have to go because she really did need to go and be with Dad. So there's another wall at 90 degrees to the wall that was finished. And that wall was only half done. But the thing is, it's so near the kit, you've got problems when you're trying to get into it. So today was the big day. That paint's probably older than I am, you know, Mike. Luckily, I knew what to do with it. So it was painting a wall. Luckily, it wasn't a big wall. It was the wall that's like around the window. So it wasn't a full wall. And even more luckily, it actually matches the other wall. Because I said to Mike, the nightmare scenario is it isn't going to match the other wall because it's been 9 years. But it looks the same. Thank the Lord. So it's done. It's done. Oh, Kim says her father was a physician. You would have loved him. He always said the best test was to just listen to the patient. Exactly. I felt a lot of the tests weren't actually treating the patient, but the disease. That's exactly. I had the most amazing doctor when I was a child. He was a lovely little man, and he was so tiny, and he reminded me, in terms of like, he was quite rotund. He looked like Churchill. He looked like a Jewish Churchill, because his name was Fine, Dr. Fine, as in, I think he changed it from Feinberg, because, you know, at the time people were changing their names. But he was amazing. You would literally go in and he would say, so when did such and such start? And you're like, I've not told you what's wrong yet, but he just knew. He could tell diabetes by sniffing it. So as you walked in, he would just smell, just sense it. He was that sensitive. I guess if you know what you're looking for, but he was amazing. And that, I think, was what put me off every other doctor after that, when I got idiot after idiot after idiot.
Shall I go and do dinner?
Yes, feel free. I've not had breakfast or lunch yet.
I'll play with the dog.
Play with the dog and then put the dinner on. That is fine. We'll have an 8 o'clock, Mike. He was so amazing. He made all the others look idiots.
That's
so
yours.
When he gave me an injection, it was one, not 37, like the idiot in the hospital. You know, he said, difficult veins to get to. Let me put an extra light on. First time. But the other one, that the baby doctor, the, what do they call them here? Junior doctor. They are qualified. They're in their first 2 years of practice. 37 attempts. She was in tears at the end. I was fine. But, you know, 37 attempts is poor, isn't it? So I love doctors like that. I'm sure we would have got on like a house on fire. Because it's like the treatments. Some treatments, if people feel they need something, you know, I want the treatment for this, like all these people dashing out for the vaccine, then that's their mindset. So maybe you should listen to them. But if there's somebody like me that's like, yeah, not yet. And we're being told in the UK that people, the populace, I don't know, they've probably asked about five people, think that when the vaccine is available, people who haven't had it shouldn't fly. They shouldn't be allowed on a plane. And I thought, well, if you take that to its natural conclusion, should we not go out the door either? I mean, I wouldn't want to be with you on a plane, to be honest. But it started. The pressure for everybody to have this has started. And for some patients, you know, that maybe they wouldn't actually take against the vaccine. Maybe the vaccine would be absolutely fine. But the fact that they're going to wind themselves up like a coiled spring means they're going to be hypersensitive to it. And do you know what? Maybe you should just take a chill pill and leave it a little bit longer. So you need to address the patient. I actually said that when I was 21, I was in hospital. It was a rush job. And I'd been there. They said, you can leave early next week. That's Monday or Tuesday. The middle of the week is Wednesday. And Thursday and Friday, that's late next week. So they said, you can leave early next week. I was still there on the Friday and I was not happy about it. But they were saying, you are too ill to leave. I was not too ill to leave. I was too ill to stay. That was the place where we had cockroaches climbing up the walls. I mean, you need a bath, they said. You need to soak in a bath. I thought, you must be kidding. It was alive. So I would gingerly go in the shower, but that was as far as we got. But it reached a point and I said to my mum, bring me some clothes. We weren't allowed clothes. If you had clothes, you see, you could escape. So I rang my mum and I said, bring me clothes, I'm leaving. So she said, I'll sort it out. They sent, because it was Saturday, they sent this junior doctor to talk me out of it. This was the one with the, you'll get an infection, you're in bed 13, talk about psychosomatic. And they sent this junior doctor, and she probably was about 25, 26, something like that. And she sat down, she started giving me all the medical garbage. And I'm looking like a nodding dog. And I said to her, because she was saying like I was insane and they would take no responsibility for it. And, you know, if I keeled over. And I said, have you actually ever contemplated talking to the patient and not discussing the disease? And she just looked as though, pardon, I said, yes, behind you addressing all of the issues with my condition is me. And if I don't get out of here, I'm going to go stark staring mad. So I'll be leaving then. Their parting gesture to me was, I just started antibiotics. We're not going to give you any antibiotics. You'll have to go to your GP. It was Saturday, 10 o'clock at night. My chances of getting to the GP or getting the GP to see me before Monday, slim to non-existent. But we won't give you any pills. So they started me on a course of drugs and then stopped it just to be pig awkward. What they wanted me to do was get in touch with my GP as an emergency and to disturb my GP's weekend as a punishment. So I said to Mum, I'll do without them. I'm fine. I'll be fine when I'm out of here. And I was. I absolutely was. So, yeah, I gave her a little bit of a lesson there. I told her to address the patient. And she looked horrified at the thought. Absolutely horrified at the thought. But it is. It's so, so, so important. Now, you see, then, what a lovely attitude. It was a privilege to treat patients. And the trust they placed in you was also a privilege. Taught you that early on. That's amazing, Kim. That is so wonderful. He sounded like the kind of person that should be at medical school teaching that to the imbeciles that they seem to let loose on us today, who don't care, just don't care. I mean, we had one at law school that was ethics, I think it was, professional ethics. And I always thought at medical school they should have something like, you know, hello, I'm a patient. This is what a person looks like. But I don't, they certainly don't have that over here. I don't know if they have it in the States. Oh, poor Simon, he's like me, so difficult to get blood out of. You go into the treatment room, she starts slapping my arm to get the veins up. People in the waiting room look at me suspiciously, like I've just been in for a kinky spanking session. My veins never appear if you hit them. They don't respond to that kind of treatment. Why in the world would they tell everyone who's in bed 13 they'll get an infection? Why would you number the bed 13? Why don't you just skip from... Why are you numbering the beds? That's a thought. Why are you numbering the beds? There's people in the beds. You're not treating the beds. You're treating people. But I think they forgot that. Now, see, in dental school, they did have an ethics class. I don't... They might do a little bit on it, but it's not like core to the curriculum. And it... Yes, there's ethics involved, but it's more than that, isn't it? It's more... I mean, it should be really simple. Treat other people as you would like to be treated. Simple as that. Simple as that. But they don't seem to have that. And there's quite a few retired doctors in the Catanians. And when they do their after dinner speeches, they're all like tales of, you know, when I was a medic. And they're horrific. These stories are horrific. And we, you know, somebody gets up. We had one at the virtual one only about 3 weeks ago. And I didn't realise this guy wasn't a doctor, but there was a doctor there and he knew about this story that this guy was going to share. And I'm sitting there and Mike kind of twigged, I think, that it was going to be medical. And I'm listening. And luckily, it was that night between Marooned and... it was a Friday, so after hours. Mike twigged it was medical, so he dived in and he said, you know, I think this is going to be a medical one. You might want to skip it. Meanwhile, I'm sat there absolutely incredulous listening to these stories. They're not funny. You know, oh, the patient died. That's not funny on any level. But apparently these medics seem to think it is. So I think... either they never had the human gene before they went in or they had it surgically removed during their training. I don't know which. That's why Craig was such a revelation, Kim. I'd never had a dentist like that. Chris was the first one I spoke to. He was the implantologist. And he was very much a lovely guy. Absolutely lovely guy. He'd literally just done his first marathon because when he had his second child, he had a hole in the heart. And they said he wasn't going to survive. And the hospital took him in and he did. They did amazing operations and stuff and he did. And this, obviously, we don't pay a bill over here. We don't get to see the bill to see how much that would have been because it's free at the point of service. But he obviously, as a dentist, had some clue how much all this had cost into the hundreds of thousands. And he decided he was going to do a marathon and do a sponsorship thing. And he raised in total about £50,000 for the unit. He was a lovely guy. I mean, he's a dentist. He's running all over the country. He's got three young children, one of whom, you know, has got this heart condition. And he's training to do a marathon as well. So he was absolutely a lovely, lovely guy. And when he said, you know, so I'm the implantologist, but then you'll have Craig, who's your dentist. And I'm like, oh, God. I thought the chances of finding another one as nice as you are slim to non-existent. And then I met Craig. And Craig's amazing. He is a really, really nice guy. So I was incredibly lucky. And then, that was two. And then got the hat trick, Kim, and I met you. Three nice dentists in the world. Who the heck knew that? Because I sure didn't. How many others have I had? God, there was two when I was a kid. There was two when I was in Stixville, the little village we moved to. God, it was like the village of the damned. And then here I had another three. So seven that I wouldn't let loose on a cadaver. They were that bad. Oh, the graveyard humour. I get that. But if it's a after dinner speech to only medics, then they can laugh amongst themselves. But this one's not. But everyone was laughing. And I thought, you know, some people, and I mean, originally I thought there was only me and my mother scared of the dentist, like not going to the dentist. It was only when I started going and people were saying, like, what are you doing this week? And I said, well, I've got three dental appointments, that the blood drained from their face and they looked completely horrified. And I said, what's the matter? Oh, hate dentists. And I'm thinking, but I thought there was only me. I really had no idea of the people that I knew, how many were scared of the dentist. So ditto with doctors. So when you go to a Catanian evening, you're thinking like, please, not another doctor thing, not another dental thing, not funny, just not funny. I think it needs to be more generic. I get what you're saying. They do. They've got a very, very stressful job. But again, I think it works in the company of other medics. But for people, and it might work in the company of people who don't really care one way or the other. But it's a bit like people who like spiders and they go to arachnid events. I'm not overly fond of them myself, so I wouldn't choose to put myself into a position where I've got to listen to stories about them or watch presentations with lovely spiders crawling all over. I think it's that. And more people are scared than I thought of. It was so funny, wasn't it, Kim, when we were in Brooklands. I played, it was the one from Little House of Horrors or whatever it's called. Little Shop of Horrors, that's the one. The dentist. And Kath was, oh, I didn't know you were a dentist. Now, if you think I'm bad with dentists, Kath is 10 times worse. 10 times worse. She can't even hear the word dentist. And that's what I mean about these after dinner speeches. I know it's difficult to find some topics that are completely non-denominational, that don't offend anybody and don't upset anybody. I get that. Mike and I did one for the luncheon club. And we put this bit in it. And I said, no, it'll be fine. And I know that it's like a religious thing. I said, but they'll be fine. They won't mind that. It'll be fine. We came to deliver it. And this guy had never been to the luncheon club before. He's probably never been seen since. But as we turned around to start, I said, there's a priest just sat there in the front row. And Mike went, oh, no. Do you want to take that slide out? I said, it's too late now. As it happens, he was a cool priest. But, you know, there's some other priests I know. Yeah, that probably wouldn't have gone down well. You do need to know them. Oh, Anthony had a really nice consultant at Leeds. Oh, no, that's not likely to be Jonathan's mum, is it? No. Really explained things well, pros and cons. Looked after you when he was a registrar, both as a consultant. Oh, killed in a cycling accident. That's shocking. Do you know, I often wonder when I hear stories like that, like, why that person? Why are we left with people on this earth that, you know, really shouldn't be breathing the same air? And lovely, lovely people not here anymore. That really gets me, that. That's horrible. Oh, a dental story. Go on then, Kim. When I was in school, I had a woman come in who'd lost a crown on a front tooth. She says to me, I really need to get the crown back as it's hurting my husband during hot sex. I wasn't sure I wanted to put my hand in her mouth. That's all. When Mike reads that in the chat. At least she was being honest. But I'm sorry if it, maybe you're doing it wrong. Kim, that was the best dental story ever. Are you trained to cope with things like that? Or do you just kind of, you know, don't show any emotion. Don't show any emotion. I mean, even if that was the reason, you wouldn't say, would you? Social distancing, Kim. Could you treat her from the car park? It's the best one ever. You just carry on. Oh, I guess my nearest to that, and luckily it was nothing like that. I wasn't even, had I finished my degree? No, I hadn't. I was heading into my last year in my degree, which turned out not to be my last year because I got a place at Oxford and ended up doing a postgrad before I'd actually graduated. I did it all the wrong way round. But this guy, obviously the solicitors I was working at, the lawyers, was a medical malpractice specialty. And there was 1, 2, 3, I think there were 4 solicitors, 4 qualified solicitors and some clerks. And I was a final year law student. But there was also in there people who could have interviewed folk. So all told, in terms of who could have interviewed people, there was probably about 15. And I'd been there 2 weeks. Medical malpractice, hold that thought. So I thought, there's no way you're going to get near a client, you know. Well, there was this guy, and he was suing probably the NHS Trust. Instead of having 2 batteries, he had 3 batteries. He was born with 3 batteries, as we say. If you wonder what batteries are, think dogs. Mayer had his batteries till the day he died. This guy, 3 batteries, not 2 batteries. So he decided, God knows why, I don't know what difference it would make, to go in and have 1 battery removed. And then he would be, air quotes, normal. So fair enough. He went in. It was all sorted out. Not a problem. God alone knows what they did to him. But when he left, he had 1 battery. So it all went terribly pear-shaped. And what we needed to do, what needed to happen was he needed to give a statement. And he's going to tell you what happened. That's it, you know. Well, he was the client of one of the partners. And the partners were male and female. The male one did not want to go anywhere near this bloke, as though it was catching. So he said, I'm not talking to him. I'm not talking to a man about that. So my other principal, what was a lady, said, I can't talk to him about that. Yeah, you can't, I can't sit there. No, I can't do that. So I thought, well, you know, hang on, how exactly do you remove batteries? Isn't it an orchidectomy? It's a testicle removal. So an orchidectomy, I think. With a sharp knife, Simon. Carefully. But if you've got 3, you know, you're aiming for 2, not 1. So I thought, well, I'm, you know, bottom of the food chain here. You know, I haven't even graduated yet, so I'm right off the hook. In the lambs, we use rubber bands. Do you know, they'd probably been better if they'd have done it that way, Kim, but they took him in and that was the end of that. Watch the Yorkshire Vet tomorrow and you'll find out. Well, as they went down the chain of command, well, I'm not talking to him, I can't face him. I'm a woman, I don't know about these things, I wouldn't know what to ask. It trickled down and trickled down. I thought, God, it'd be the cleaner next. And I'm still thinking, there's no way it's going to be me because I've not qualified yet. Down the chain, down the chain. I think I was probably 1 point ahead of the cleaner. Guess who got the job? Go interview this bloke. And I thought, what the hell is wrong with you people? You would just treat him as you would want to be treated if it was you. Now, obviously, me, not got the equipment, but I can imagine. I can imagine. Just have empathy with people. Understand. You know, that's all they need. They want to be heard. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been suing them, would he? He wanted to be heard. So I ended up interviewing him. After that, it was open season. If there was ever an interview that somebody didn't fancy, Muggins got it. One of them was a woman. I forget. Oh, I think that was an anaesthesia awareness case. And literally, I got known as, oh, go if you want a tissue, go to Elaine. She's got a drawer full of Kleenex for when she interviews people. And I'm thinking, that's the first you are. It's a privilege to be the one that talks to them, like Kim says, because, you know, they've already been traumatised with something else. They don't need traumatising with anymore. So shut up. Sit down. Shut up. Listen. Make notes. And tell them that you will do your absolute best for them and you completely understand. They all left with a smile on their face that they'd actually been listened to. Because a lot of the time, you know, you're going to be poo-pooed. In medical malpractice, you're going to be poo-pooed by the medical practice. So whoever the medical men involved are, or women, it's going to be like, especially with anaesthesia awareness, you're lying. She's not lying. She's got chapter and verse on every word you said. She's not lying. And they'd still deny it. And they're telling her that she's insane and she didn't hear that and it was a dream. So many, many people, by the time they get to you, they've already been told 27 times that they're barking mad. All you need to do is listen. I can't understand why would you go into medical malpractice if you can't talk to people who've got problems? I cannot understand that. I would actually go out of my way and make calls to people, like, you know, if it was coming up to Christmas and we didn't really have much news, but it was coming up to Christmas and, you know, they're going to be thinking about it, then I give them a quick call. But if I gave them a quick call, technically speaking, and I didn't always do this, technically speaking, a 1 minute call, I should bill them 6 minutes. You can't bill anything less than 6 minutes. So it's a tenth of an hour that you have to bill them for. And if they're charging £600 an hour for your services, then you're talking about billing them 60 quid to say, happy Christmas. I'd just make the call and not register it. I couldn't be doing with that. Not on. Doesn't even sound as difficult as having to work on some awful rape or abuse case. I totally agree. It's not. You might feel, I mean, obviously they felt uncomfortable, but I can think of worse situations. I really can. The other thing that nobody wanted to do, and I ended up doing, was the Hillsborough case. We were working on the Hillsborough case. And they were all there when they were being interviewed on the TV about, yes, we're going to sue everybody and all of that. But when it came time to talk to the families who'd been bereaved or the people who had witnessed it, where were they then? Oh, they were nowhere. That was me. I ended up, I went all over Liverpool interviewing people because they didn't, wouldn't or couldn't. And yes, it was bad to talk about. But I just thought, well, at least it's me and I've been to football matches, because there was one case that involved a football match and it was they were talking about the crowd outside and how disorganised it was, basically. And the barrister had no clue and said, well, aren't they all in an orderly queue? And I said, what do you think this is, the opera? Well, yes, you queue up to get in. I said, no, it's a football match. It's a carve-up. And I thought, this guy hasn't got a clue. Not a clue. How can you defend somebody in that circumstance when you're thinking, well, he should have been in an orderly queue. It doesn't work like that. Read the brief, man. But he didn't understand. Just totally didn't understand. So at least, despite the fact I'm not a Liverpool fan, I'm a United fan, the fact that I understood football, I could at least empathise in that term. So, yeah. But can you imagine taking a job on and then not? It would be like Kim saying, I want to be a dentist, but don't actually want to touch teeth, which I guess is possible these days. But it's insane, isn't it? Talking to the client is part of the job. And it was, to me, the best part of the job. It was lawyers I couldn't be dealing with. So if all I did all day was talk to clients, I'd be quite happy. It was when you got onto lawyers that would ring you because they wanted their £60 for 1 minute to say what colour was the car. You're like, what difference does it make? Your client crashed into the back of my client. What difference did you? It wasn't invisible paint. So does it matter? But they would do that, and then you would find on the bill 6 minutes called inquiry. So you had to try and, when you were sending the information to them, you had to make sure everything, you know, I mean, you think about things like the driver's name, what car it was, the number plate, but the colour, really? You know, do you want me to give you the wheel trim number as well? But you had to try and anticipate it, because otherwise they'd just bill for it. Now, if they lost the case, then it didn't matter anyway. They'd have to pay their own bill. But that was what they did. That was what they did. And that was why I couldn't do it anymore. That's why I work with computers. There you go. I can smell dinner. Ooh, Monday. And we've got one on the desk. So the plan for tonight is more RAM fitting, more unboxings, and getting the other one on a desk. I won't say my desk, on a desk. We do have a completely empty desk. Related to that, we've got no chance of getting in bed because the bed's full of the stuff off the desk. So it's going to be a lot of judicious shuffling, but we will get there. And I am hoping by Friday to actually be doing the show on Friday after hours on the new machine. But we don't even know yet if it's Bigglest or not. I don't think it is. I don't think it's going to be Bigglest. But we shall see. And I've got my little camera set up ready to record it all. So, hope you've enjoyed it. Been great talking to you. What week are we in now? I've totally lost track. Is it week 39 or 40? Never mind. Anyway, it's the start of it. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. Oh, and how are you all enjoying the Advent stuff? Good luck getting the kit sorted. Where is Lola going to be without a heated blanket on the bed? Oh, last night, Kim, there was stuff on the bed and she couldn't get on. She headbutted the door open, stood and looked at it and started chunnering, really talking. Sammy's can talk. Maya never bothered. He just looked at you. But she can talk if she wants to. If she wants something, wants a treat, or like last night, can you shift this rubbish off the bed because I want to get in? So we did. We shifted it all off so she could get into bed. And today, just as she'd settled, because it was chaotic, there was stuff being moved all over the place. Just as she'd settled back along the front door, the gas man arrived. She was beside herself. Oh, I'm glad you're loving the Advent gifts. Excellent. I've got something rather snazzy tomorrow. Rather snazzy. Things that I use all the time that you might not. Yours a recording of the chunnering. Do you know, I think that, Tracy, when she really starts, I think I need to record this. But it's as though she knows. So what I'm going to do is, we've got more room in the office now. So when she comes in looking for treats from the treat drawer, I will already have a recorder going. And I will try and ignore her for a couple of minutes while she chunners on with herself. And then we could all hear it. That would be excellent. I'm hoping you'll like tomorrow's, Tracy. Something you can use in Affinity Photo. Let's just say that. Right. But, we're having gammon tonight. Gammon and veg. So I'm looking forward to that. For the moment, I'm going to say goodnight from me and I will say goodnight from Mike. We will both see you next time. Stay safe, guys.